going to read text 48 from Canto 3, chapter 31. This is the last verse of the chapter, and the chapter is called The Movements of the Living Entities. I'll chant the Sanskrit and then the translation. Samyak darshanaya buddhya yoga vairagya yuktaya maya virachite loke charin yasya kalevaram. Translation: endowed with right vision and strengthened by devotional service and a pessimistic attitude toward material identity, one should relegate his body to the illusory world through his reason. Thus, one can be unconcerned with the material world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is sometimes misunderstood that one has to associate with persons engaged in devotional service. That if one has to associate with persons engaged in devotional service, he will not be able to solve the economic problem. To answer this argument, it is described here that one has to associate with liberated persons, not directly, physically, but by understanding, through philosophy and logic, the problems of life. It is stated here, Samyak darshanaya buddhya. One has to see perfectly. And by intelligence and yogic practice, one has to renounce this world. That renunciation can be achieved by the process recommended in the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The devotee's intelligence is always in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His attitude towards the material existence is one of detachment, for he knows perfectly well that this material world is a creation of illusory energy. Realizing himself to be part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, the devotee discharges his devotional service and is completely aloof from material action and reaction. Thus, at the end, he gives up his material body, or the material energy, and as pure soul he enters the kingdom of God. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 31st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Kapiladev's Instructions on the Movements of the Living Entities. So this is the last verse of a scary chapter. Not exactly scary. The realistic chapter where that which is commonly lauded and glorified and in other ways appreciated and praised, the good fortune of a good mother who becomes pregnant and is carrying a child in the womb, it shows the picture from the child's perspective, the living entity within the womb of the mother. And step by step by step, the experiences, the consciousness, the difficulty, extreme discomfort, and so on and so on. And if childbirth is difficult for the mother, imagine it for the child. And then after birth, the distractions of the living entity, although in this chapter describes some very special living entities. They pray to the Supreme Lord, please get me out of here. I'll do anything. I'll become your devotee. I'll be good. Just let me out of this situation. But after birth, so many things distract the attention of that living entity once again, and again become bewildered. So much instruction in the whole chapter intended specifically by Kapiladeva to not paint a morbid picture, but paint a realistic picture of the tribulation of material existence. Even in that stage that seems very simple and wonderful and very nice. The message is a message of detachment, and the detachment is not just stay away from the suffering, that kind of detachment, but the sharp distinction, detachment that comes from the sharp distinction between who the living entity really is as spirit soul and this material circumstance that the living entity finds himself within. Detachment from illusion, and that becomes possible by acceptance of reality. The whole of Kapiladeva's teachings, Samkhya philosophy, is to understand the distinction between matter and spirit. And there are various paths that he follows to make that distinction very clear. One of them previously presented is the different material elements, and over here is another energy altogether, the spiritual energy. So here in this chapter, it's the conscious being, the living entity, and the material circumstance in which the living entity finds himself. And so again, not only it's fraught with difficulties, but it's illusory. Illusory in the sense that it's distinct from our real identity, but by the influence of Maya, one commonly identifies with that which we are not. So Samkhya philosophy is detachment from that Maya, the illusory conception of what we're not, instead having a clear conception of who we are, even in the midst of material circumstances. And so this verse is a summary, because it's the conclusion of all of that presentation. Three things are mentioned: endowed with right vision, samyak darshanaya, and strengthened by devotional service. So this is, let's stop on that one a little bit. Samkhya, impersonalist non-devotees, they like Samkhya too. They like Samkhya because it allows them to identify with spirit instead of matter. But there's no devotional service in impersonalism. So it's not strengthened by devotional service. Actually, the purpose of all of that knowledge of making that distinction is to properly direct devotional service on the platform of that which is eternal. The eternal soul doing his eternal activity, serving the Supreme Lord, utilizing the material energy, utilizing the body, utilizing the mind, utilizing the senses, utilizing that which is illusory, but is part of the energy of the Supreme Lord, and using that in Krishna service. So strengthened by devotional service, this knowledge of what's what, strengthened by devotional service, and a pessimistic attitude towards material identity. Prabhupada would sometimes speak like this very simply. A devotee is very optimistic about their spiritual destination and the process of reaching that spiritual destination, very optimistic. But as far as material life is concerned, very pessimistic. In a realistic sense, not sour grapes. Sometimes Prabhupada would describe the fox that tries to get the grapes and he's jumping to get the grapes and can't reach the grapes, and so he says, oh, the grapes are sour. Wanting to enjoy. The enjoyment doesn't come, oh, there wasn't enjoyment anyway. So not that kind of sour grapes detachment. But the reality, even Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, the material world is created as a place of misery. Dukkhalayam vashashvatam. I just heard a lecture Prabhupada was describing this at length. The personal, the material position is one wants to be master. I want to be the proprietor of things and enjoy those things. I want to be master. And everyone, every living entity, not just human beings, whatever their position is, they want to be an enjoyer. They want to be a master. They want to be Purusha. But actually they're Prakriti and they're meant to be enjoyed. They're meant to be a servant of he who is actually the master. So Sankhya, Kapila Deva is teaching through Sankhya, accept your actual position, and that's devotional service. But looking at the other option, pessimistic. It's not a... The material identity and everything that goes with it, it's not something I'm going to chase after. I'm not optimistic towards that. But in material life, people are very, 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 very determined. Despite all losses and all indications that the material world is it's not meant to be a place of enjoyment. They still want it to be a place of enjoyment. And just rearrange things and do it a little differently and gather some more stuff and then you can be an enjoyer. Although it never happens. Some sensation is there, as the senses contact sense objects, no doubt. Some sensation is there, but very quickly that sensation turns into misery. So the reality is, it's a miserable place by design. It's intended, like a prison house, it's intended to not be a nice place. So the person's want to avoid going to that prison house instead of living in a life of freedom outside of the prison. But it's not a comfortable place. It's not a nice place by design. So therefore, the devotee is the follower of Lord Kapila's teaching. The punchline here is pessimistic towards material identity. So these three things, knowledge of what's what, strengthened by devotional service, pessimistic towards material identity. One should relegate his body to this illusory world through his reason. Now, a very fundamental teaching in spiritual life. So fundamental that Prabhupada spoke about it in one Ratha Yatra lecture in Golden Gate Park. In other words, fit for everyone to hear. The general public that doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness and devotional service. So Prabhupada explained these three standard ways by which people come to know things, or try to come to know things, by sense perception, by reason and logic, and by descending knowledge. Shabda Brahman. Senses are imperfect, so there's an imperfect source of knowledge. Reason is also fallible. One may not know something directly by sense perception, but reason it. It seems to me that something, something. So, by reason and logic, we try to know things. Just like I can hear voices in the hall. I can't see the persons in the hall, but I can hear some voices in the hall. So it's by reason, someone's out in the hall talking. Or I can't see the sunlight, but it's now 8:35 in the morning, so by reason, the sun is up. Because so many days of my life, at 8:30 in the morning, the sun is up. So the sun is up. By reason, the sun is up. So, it's very likely that the sun is up. But at some point, one day, the sun's not going to come up. The whole thing is over. The whole show is over. Anyway, so sense perception and reason are imperfect sources of knowledge. The best source of knowledge is to hear from one who is a perfect knower. That's God. He knows things perfectly. So to hear from Him. Or to hear from one who has heard from Him. And, or so forth in the cyclic succession. Receive knowledge in the cyclic succession. Descending knowledge from a perfect source is the best means of knowing. So we relegate commonly reason to a lesser position. But in this concluding verse of the chapter, reason is held up here in a high position by Lord Kapila Dev. The reasoning is when, that is to say, devotional service is also to be accepted. The platform of devotional service and the practical execution of devotional service, we still employ reason. It's not the final basis of understanding anything, but by reason we come to understand devotional service is a better way of life. Devotional service is, like for example, the constitutional position of all living beings is to render service. So that's a scriptural statement. Therefore it's a fact. But we can examine and see everywhere somebody is serving. So it stands to reason, yes, that's a good statement. Everyone is serving. Like the common declaration of the scriptures about reason. By reason one can say all men are mortal. That means everyone's going to die. So that's the statement. So now let me do my empiric research and see, has everyone that was born died? I can do a survey or do a census. Search everywhere and see if it is a fact that everyone that's been born has died. There may be someone that was born that didn't die, that I didn't just meet or somehow come across. So the fallibility of the sense perception and reason and logic are well known. In spiritual circles at least, it's well known. Still, we utilize reason in our execution of devotional service. For example, very nice example in the Damodar Leela. When Mother Jasoda was churning butter and Krishna was sleeping to the side, Krishna woke up, Krishna came to Mother Jasoda's side and he pulled on her sari. He didn't speak anything, but she reasoned, he wants me to feed him. And so she stopped churning the butter and placed Krishna on her lap and gazed into his beautiful face to her heart's content and began to feed Krishna. Then she saw over another place on the stove the milk was boiling over. So she used her reasoning process. She thought, if I just let the milk boil over, this was also for some service to Krishna, all that milk will be spoiled. It's meant for service to Krishna. But Krishna wants to be fed, but if I set Krishna down, then I can come back and feed Krishna and I can save the milk on the stove. So she used her reasoning process to go do that service first instead of continuing to feed Krishna. And then when she went to the stove and sprinkled some water on the pot, and so the milk subsided, she took the milk off the stove, came back to feed Krishna, and Krishna was gone. But she saw the broken butter pot where she was churning, and she saw a stone by the side of the butter pot, and she used her reasoning process, this must have been Krishna's work. She didn't see Krishna do it, but she knew that Krishna is mischievous, and Krishna was angry because she had put Krishna down. So Krishna likely did this. It's not conclusive, but in fact Krishna did it. So those are just some simple examples from even Mother Jasoda is using her reasoning process, reasoning faculty, to understand how to render her service best to Krishna. She didn't see Krishna. She saw the little footprints of Krishna leading in the direction of the place where Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda kept butter in the storeroom for the milk products, yogurt and butter and milk in the storeroom. So she reasoned Krishna must be going there to get some butter. Like that. If Mother Jasoda can use reasoning power to assist her in her devotional service to Krishna, we can also, very carefully, use our reasoning faculty to try to best serve Krishna. So, here, in this verse, Kapila Deva is also inviting, encouraging his mother to use her reasoning faculty to understand what the material circumstance really is, what the spiritual circumstance really is, fortify it or strengthen it by the execution of practical devotional service, and be detached from the material circumstance. Being detached from material circumstance doesn't mean you trash it, you throw it away and do nothing with it. That's one kind of renunciation, but it's not the kind of renunciation that devotional service teaches. Devotional service teaches one, just as is described, realizing himself to be a part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, the devotee discharges his devotional service and is completely aloof from material action and reaction. So that's a nice balance. Fully engaging in devotional service, very enthusiastic, very optimistic, very powerfully performed tivra bhakti, devotional service. But the material aspect of expecting happiness to come, material pleasure, material enjoyment, prosperity, etc., 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 that's not the expectation of the devotee. It's detachment from all of that. All of that is fruitive work. So detachment from the expectations of happiness through fruitive work. But at the same time, carrying out devotional service. Being very enthusiastically engaged in devotional service on the spiritual platform, while at the same time using material senses, process of reason, intelligence. These things are in Bhagavad Gita. They're dismissed as that's not what the living entity really is. Second chapter, very, very basic. Again, it was just hearing Prabhupada speak like that in a lecture. From the very beginning, Bhagavad Gita teaches the mind, it's material. Intelligence is material. The body is material. And so many promises and isms are created to bring happiness to the body and bring happiness to the mind and so forth. And people are allured because they're in Maya to find happiness through those things. So devotional service is recognizing the illusory nature of those things. At the same time, they can be utilized improperly in service to Krishna when there's proper guidance. And that's what is in the first paragraph of the purport, and I'll just describe that briefly and we'll end. Very interesting purport. Prabhupada begins by saying, some people say, oh, to engage in devotional service, I have to associate with persons who are so renounced. Then how will I get my necessities? How will I economically survive? I won't be able to solve my economic problems. And then the next sentence. To answer this argument, it is described here that one has to associate with liberated persons not directly physically, but by understanding, through philosophy and logic, the problems of life. That's very interesting. We do require sadhu sangha, we require association of saintly persons. But what does that association with saintly persons mean? It means through their wonderful instructions, to assimilate those instructions and let those instructions guide our lives. And when those instructions are in our hearts and guiding our lives, that is association. And so going back to the first part of, oh, I can't solve the economic necessities of life. Devotional service is not impractical. It's very practical. Necessities of life are supplied through the proper execution of duty. Prabhupada, just this morning, heard Prabhupada saying, I was in Calcutta. He was lecturing in Mayapur. I was in Calcutta, and one scholar came to me and said, Swamiji, why is it that there is so much turmoil in the world today? What is the reason? And Prabhupada said, the reason is, persons have neglected the understanding of the natural divisions of society, varnashram, and the proper execution of those duties unto the Supreme Lord, because that has been lost. Now there's turmoil. There's just chaos everywhere. People are competing over being the Purusha, and the louder barking dog wins. They'll bark, bark. Woof, woof. And it's turmoil. And some people say, oh, you should bark nicely. Just play nicely. But you got to win. And everyone trying to win. So, it's turmoil. So, the platform of accepting, I have a psychophysical nature, I have a body, I have a mind, I have a nature to follow. Let me follow that nature according to the regulations of Scripture and dedicate that to the personality of Godhead. That's just the beginning of the message of the Vedas. It goes further and further, but that's a beginning position to understand. So, necessities are then supplied. Remember Prabhupada speaking one time that during the British rule, there was an artificial famine created by the British. What they did was, they gathered up all the rice and stockpiled it, and then let the rice out in little bits. And so the price of rice became 10 times what it normally was. And then Prabhupada explained, at the time, 1 kilo of rice cost so many rupees. But a poor person that needed a basic amount of rice just to survive, 10 times that they didn't have. So they died. There was starvation created by this artificial price of rice, boosting up the price of rice. So Prabhupada, being a householder at the time, he went to the nearby temple, Bhaktisiddhanta's temple, the Gaudiya Math temple, and went to the devotees that were residing there and said, "Are you all right during this shortage of rice? Is there anything that I can do and bring to you for your necessity?" And they said, no. Krishna is taking care of everything. We have extra. We're cooking for other people. That's okay. We're okay." And Prabhupada said, "Then I could understand. If you become Krishna's devotee, Krishna takes care of your necessities. It's Krishna who's taking care of not just the necessities of the devotee. Krishna is taking care of the necessities of every living being. So one who's dependent upon Krishna doesn't mean we don't take practical action in life, but it's depending upon Krishna, that strengthening of devotional service that fortifies the detachment from illusory existence and the absorption in the spiritual existence through the medium of devotional service. Then the economic problems are taken care of." He then explained in this lecture this morning, it says directly in Bhagavad Gita that when there is sacrifice, then there's rain. And when there's rain, then there's production from the land, sufficient grain. And then people have their necessities of life. But if you neglect sacrifice, then there won't be rain. He was saying, here in India, the last 2 years, there's been severe drought. And since the whole of India largely is agrarian, without necessities of life, without rain, there's not necessities of life. So how do you get the necessities of life? Perform sacrifice. Neglecting sacrifice, the economic necessities are restricted. Perform sacrifice, economic necessities are provided. That's the Vedic formula. So it's a reverse reasoning, actually. It is stated here, samyak darshanaya buddhya. One has to see perfectly and by intelligence and yogic practice, one has to renounce this world. The renunciation of the world isn't walk away from it. Renunciation of the world is not be optimistic to be an enjoyer of it, because it's not an enjoyable place. But with detachment, let me perform my duties, act according to my psychophysical nature. I have prescribed duties. Let me do them with submission unto the personality of Godhead. So this is just the summary. In the last part of that paragraph, Prabhupada said, all of this is described, the process of knowledge and detachment is described very nicely in chapter 2 of the first canto. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayad Haitukam. That verse that says, when you engage in devotional service, automatically detachment and knowledge arise. And then it describes the process of devotional service, Vasudev Bhakti, or Krishna Bhakti, how to do service to Krishna. Then naturally, knowledge and detachment will be situated, at least accessible. And through proper guidance, proper association of sadhu, by taking those teachings, how to engage in devotional service nicely, how to be detached from the material world, then, as Prabhupada ends the purport, at the end of this life, when the body is finished, one goes back to Godhead. That's the conclusion of this Movements of the Living Entities chapter, Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti. Hare Krishna. So any discussion? Comments? Yes. You're inspired.
I'm inspired, but at the same time, I'm just like, I'm not.
Does it really work?
I go through a phase of like where I feel like, like I can just go to the temple. Everything's not provided by just put my faith in Krishna. And then other times there's just like, I'm pushed down. So how does faith fit?
Well, I touched on that already, but it can expand on it. We each of us have our nature. For you to live your life as I'm living mine wouldn't work. It's not your nature. For me to live my life as you're living your life, it wouldn't work. It's not my nature. I'm very happy living my life the way I'm living. And others would not be happy living their life this way. So, one part of this is recognizing what is one's nature. And then within that framework, okay, I have my nature, then what's the light inside? The faith in Krishna. So, the faith in Krishna for you would not be, oh, just go move in the temple and Hare Bol, Krishna will take care of everything because I have faith in Krishna. That wouldn't be appropriate, given the psychophysical nature and the children and the responsibilities of executing those things. So another way of doing that, execute your devotional service to Krishna according to your nature. And now just on the agrarian thing, very rare to find persons who, according to their nature, they're contented to do that. Even if the facility is there to do that, as their expression of their faith in devotional service, because their faith is not there or their nature is not there. It's very, very, very rare to find such persons, even if it's all laid out for them. There are such persons, but at least in our modern American culture, it's very, very, very rare to find persons that are prepared to live that way. Although a life of simplicity and a life of devotional service and so on may be according to one's nature. We're so removed or distanced from that kind of dependence. It's certainly possible, but it's something that's very rare to find. And therefore, something like, you know, a step in the direction of, you know, an incremental approach, like many people, something that many people can do and are doing, is they have their little organic garden in their backyard, or a community garden like that. So that's realistic. And so whether it's like the devotees that are traveling about here and there from New Vrajadham, you know, there's this level, this level, this level, or this level. But, you know, it's good according to one's capacity to do something in the direction of that which I have faith in, but it's not unrealistic for my nature to do this and then do this and sustain it over time and develop it, and maybe it will grow until that, and so on. That's, you know, but there are some persons, you know, in different cultures, in different places in the world, there's a stronger inclination as far as culture is concerned to be more whatever, to be more interested in sustainable systems, for example. Devamitra Maharaj was describing this to me, that in New Zealand, where he does preaching, in the whole world they have ratings, and it's number one or number two in the whole world of interest in that. So to have a facility like that in New Zealand is going to get much more traction than in New York or New York City. Like Kali Krishna was describing yesterday, coming back by car from the city. And we were, you know, observing different neighborhoods. So because he had a restaurant business for some time, he's aware of how many dollars a storefront in Manhattan costs, and how much an apartment costs, and how much a condo costs, and, you know, the marketing in different neighborhoods is so different. Just neighborhood by neighborhood, because there's a different type of people. I'm just making this as an example of, there are different types of people. And something has to suit somebody's nature to flourish. So while there may be something that's, you know, we read in the first canto of Bhagavatam that describes so many nice things about the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira and the abundance, and but while we don't have lack of faith that that was in fact the case, to do it ourselves today, whoa. But it's, you know, to take a step towards that is according to my nature. Then it becomes, that's something sustainable, that's something doable. That, not just stop and start, I mean, start and then stop, but start and continue. So, that may be too long of an answer to your question, but there's a balance between, you know, what our position of faith is, and what our nature is. And connecting the two properly is necessary. Something else? Yes.
And in the previous stages, you see that, like, there's, you know,
it was much more clarity.
Yeah, the word is very clear, the nature is very distinct.
Yes.
But in Kali Yuga, and more so now than ever, there's, like, people have natures from, like, different environments, and, like, it's very complex.
It's very, very complex. Less clear. Well, it's not that that didn't exist during Vedic time. Here's an example that comes to mind. What was the position of Krishna's father, Vasudeva? Vasudeva and Devaki, they were Kshatriya. But they were a particular kind of Kshatriya. His expertise was like that of a minister. And that's what he used to save Devaki's life. He used his logic, his diplomacy, his ministerial strength to rescue Devaki's life. And because he was, it's that's something of a Brahminical side. And he gave his word. And Kamsa was so convinced, okay, you'll keep your word, then I'll not kill your wife, my sister. And he brought the first child, as he had promised. So he had a nature that was something of a mix. And you know, others in reverse. You know, a Brahmana who had Kshatriya capacity, Drona. So, but the, you know, the system in which they lived, there was clarity as to, even when there's a mix, what's the function, what's the duty, what are the parameters. And then he lived accordingly. And that becomes successful. Prabhupada was explaining in the class I was listening to this morning, it's 4.13 Bhagavad Gita, the lecture, where because the Brahmana class was strong, they taught. That was the source of knowledge by which people could understand what their varna was and how to execute accordingly. And then, just like Bhishma Dev is instructing Yudhisthira how to properly perform as a king, Bhishma Dev is a Kshatriya, but he's performing a Brahminical function of instructing Yudhisthira. Because a king's duty is to be submissive. The higher intelligence is the Brahmana, and then the king is less intelligent, but enough intelligence to follow the instructions of the Brahmana. So the point is, without qualified Brahmanas, we're not going to have a situation where there's clarity. We're going to have a situation where there's turmoil. Because from the Brahmanas comes the rest. Without the Brahmanas, the whole of the Vedic system is lost. Therefore, the reversal of that Kali Yuga tendency is what Prabhupada did, to provide education, systematically training people in the teachings of the Vedas, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam especially, so that those sensitive to Kali Yuga principles, meaning how to practically apply them, what they are and how to practically apply them becomes accessible. But it requires a really qualified Vaishnava Brahman. Then there's hope to take the turmoil and bring clarity. And easier said than done. But that's the principle. So that's what Prabhupada wanted, to create a class of first-class men and women. It means qualified Vaishnava Brahmanas to teach. And that may or may not be my nature. And that's okay. Let me assist those who it is their nature. If it's not my nature, then depending upon what my nature is. So one needs the association of qualified teachers in society to bring clarity out of chaos. Okay, thank you. Oh, yes, finish them. Our false ego.
The one that stands in the way of, you know, being able to receive the proper.
Sure. Sure.
So when that's clear away, then we can realize.
Yeah, and that there are things that happen before that happens. But sure. And it's not like on or off. It's, you know, variable. There are degrees.
Is that a progressive?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. As Vaishnavas, we don't either. Sarvapati Vinir Muktam. But we have to begin somewhere. So it depends on where we are. That's where we begin. Like in introducing Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada didn't trash, but didn't fully involve the Varnashram system either. He adjusted things according to this audience, the capacity, the psychophysical nature of the audience. In the beginning, there was only men. And then he saw, oh, this culture can't do that. So then women also. And then in the beginning, when dhotis were introduced, it was all saffron dhotis. The men wore saffron dhotis, the women wore saffron saris. And then it became, you know, women wore regular saris and grihasthas wore what? So, some differentiation. But not all of the duties of a grihastha, that's it. But, you know, they were being trained, at least given the opportunity to be trained to become brahmanas from whatever their background was. And if not, then according to their nature. So, carving out, you know, the elimination of false ego by Krishna consciousness, then doing that by introducing designations sounds contradictory. Here's brahmachari, here's a sannyasi, here's a grihastha, there's designations. But it's not who we are. Kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra, kene noi. It's not who we are, but we accept those positions because it matches our nature. Thanks. Because it matches our nature. And from that position, we engage in elimination of our false egos according to our position and our capacity. But gradual. the light inside is our faith in Krishna, or one very nice verse in purport, a taste for engaging in service to Krishna from whatever position. And that grows by the process of hearing and chanting and practical execution of devotional service. By hearing and chanting, that means associating with qualified persons. Then we become qualified as we assimilate that message and live according to that message, and gradually the false ego dissipates and we can hear more. And then we receive it, and then we execute, and then we become further free from false ego and so forth. The creeper of bhakti grows, and the covering of false ego diminishes gradually. That's the good news. That's the optimism. And the other is the pessimism. Okay, gonna end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.